maskine.
Sådan.
Og nu løber den, og så kan jeg... Og du kan se... Ja.
Ja.
Okay. Og så kommer det bare herind.
Ja, for jo. Ja, for det.
Men så slukker det nu. Ne?
Nej, det tror jeg ikke.
Sådan her. Godt. Okay. Så. Okay. Ja. Everybody understands Danish. No. There are some... So I'm not very fluent in English, but I guess I don't make more misunderstanding, inviting errors in English than I could do unintended in Danish. So it's perhaps not so big difference. For you, and I will try then to make it in a little broken American English. I shall say something on the title and on the logo and on what you cannot read here. No? So the logo for this of Math Easy and Hard is the recent book I published on this Atiyah Singer Index Theorem, which started with lectures I gave in 1971 in Allende's Chile, and the president had ordered that there should be a continuing education for all junior and senior high school teachers in the country to mark the new time. So some mathematicians had the idea, yeah, but then, of course, then it would be very natural to invite Bernhelm, who has written a thesis on Atiyah Singer Index Theorem in Bonn, and I had some contacts in Chile political, and they said, you should give to our teachers an elementary lecture so that everybody can understand what is modern mathematics about and what is the content of this Atiyah Singer Index Theorem. Okay, I gave this lecture, I gave it in broken Spanish, and it was very nice because I had somebody who took notes of my lecture. So I had then, when I came back, a manuscript of 120 pages. And then in the year, and this was really as a trying to make a hard topic easy.
And then, what happened to Chile?
Well, this is different story. And my wife told me, please, Bernhelm, not too many apropos and so on. Keep to the topic. So, no. And out of these 120 pages came now last year this volume of 780 pages, which is also updated and a little bit more explained so that one has a chance to understand it. And so to me, and I, the publisher, put on the front this nice picture made by Asia, which is somehow the symbol of mathematical studies. You go and go and go and go, and after some while you think, yes, you have not made progress, or after some while you think, it's easy, you are on the same level now. So this is a little bit ambiguity, and this is what the first remark is about this topic I will speak. The second remark is written here, and here is written Bernhelm's apostrophe reflections. This requires a little bit experience with digitalization to understand that this is written there. And this explains the difficulty of my talk now, because a math talk, and I have given here in this room several math talks in the last 37 years, or in different rooms we had before. And in a math talk, things are so easy because we discussed it 2 weeks ago on the occasion of Jens' talk here. In pure math talk, the whole structure is clear. You begin with just either let H be a complex Hilbert space, or you begin just with 5 minutes reviewing how this problem has arisen and where is the situation now. And then you go to your definitions, you go to your claims, to your theorem, you go to the proof, and then if time is not running out, you give also an example, you discuss further perspectives. But the topic gives the structure. I never used an overhead for math talk because I don't like to look at the overhead then all the time, but I prefer to look at the audience. But gives also, it is a different style to do it the one way or the other way. And in math talks, I need not to discuss with Susie 5 times, no, this structure is bad. Shouldn't I make the structure that way or that way or that way? In a math talk, I'm not going there with a little bit nervosity as I have now, because I believe to know everything relevant for my talk, that I have read it, that I know it, that I'm absolutely safe. In reality, I'm not always. It happens again and again in the discussion. Somebody arises and said, you mentioned that and that, and mentioned that this is an open problem, but Professor Jürgens in Münster, he had a publication in 2004, wasn't it, that he actually had solved it? Okay, this can happen. But in principle, for a math talk, you know absolutely what you are doing. You are on the safe side. It is, in that sense, it is easy. But a talk on reflections, I have no canonical structure. But I must try also to make something to fill this 60 minutes, and possibly some of the most important references I have not read before, because I'm not expert, literally expert in this field. I'm a practitioner, and I have thought about the problems of honor teaching perhaps longer than I have thought about math research, because already as a kid one could speculate over why do the teacher do that or something like that. So this is my 2 reservations here. This is the outline. I shall say something for the general audience why we mathematicians in particular, I believe that discussing the working experience of mathematicians has some meaning, is something which is important also for others. And I will elaborate a little bit of this. Then, on such an occasion like here, again, my wife told me, you should not speak all the time about yourself. Try to concentrate on the topic. But nevertheless, in such a historical situation, I shall talk a little bit about myself, looking back and so on, and what has changed. So I have here some points, and this is one of my main points of the talk here, is that I heavily resist all this talking about, well, the students have changed. Bernhelm, you have possibly not noticed it, but we have a new generation. And I feel I have to give an answer to this. But something has changed. We have today less metaphysical exaggerations, vain promises. We are more realistic about the role of mathematics. On the other side, we are not speaking any longer about the fantastic achievements of mathematics in my own lifetime. It is not a topic of the public. And of course, we have discussed it many times here in Roskilde and other places, these administrative changes, the continuing dismantling of the public sector and the over-administration. And on this occasion, I have to say something, even if the rector is not here, but I think I must say something before I get out of this room. But then my topic is math is hard, and I will talk a little bit about one of my projects 2 or 3 years ago, which gave me the inspiration for this talk. And I will have here, you see, my lack of structure. I cannot structure it. I can give you just here these great white elephants, typically very old man, when they said something, in my mind, important about math teaching. And I will go this list of speakers I will go through. Ne? And then the opposite position, math is easy, really. Here I have, I have also made a question mark. On the how and why, but not that it is hard. There's hard is no question mark, but here the easy is a question mark. Even we read, for example, the day before yesterday in Information that this is a scandal, Mathematik Uspiel, Missverstor, Mathematik abgeben, and so, and that there is not sufficient effort to made that really Mathematik is more easy, acceptable, and so on. So I will talk here about, this is an old philosophical problem. Schopenhauer has made some remarkable comments. Gauss has answered in his remarkable way. And then I have again an unstructured list of these elephants who have something interesting to say. This is why I think that the mathematical working experience has something to say for the general intellectual public. Let's see first here on the left side. These two things that we have on the one side, the administrators who tell us all the time, make it easy. Remember, Bernhard, it should be easy. You are losing the students, ne? And so on. And so we have on this side, going through all the administrative system, they insist on make it easy. And on the other side, we have the word, well, he is in the audience, and I don't know whether I quote you now correct by memory, but the essence was that, as I read it of you, that you have in years and years explained the two things, that math is damned hard, as long one has not understood it. When one has understood, it is different. And math is not invisible, unless one looks a little bit under the surface. So this is something which is my basic assumptions, which I need not really to discuss, which perhaps also most people have had their own personal experience on their own body or on their children's body, that they got Blue America. What is Blue America in English?
Bruises.
Bruises, but not blue. Ne? Yellow bruises, perhaps in English. Ne? Yellow bruises from mathematics. They got it, and we got it when we were students. We got also yellow bruises from working with mathematics. So there's no discussion for me about that. This is one of of the basic assumptions. And the other thing, the visibility and invisibility is also clear. On the, here I have this arrow in black. This have been a lifelong my hope that I get something really interesting out of the theory of communication, out of psychology, to get some hints how to make teaching better, to make it more accessible, and so on. So this is clear that this is, many mathematicians are thinking there must be, I could better understand this, really the psychology, this is humans we are talking with, and so on, that one always has the hope that better understanding here is. And there are, in my mind, also two inputs. There's on the one side the input of Chomsky and Naur, which I will explain later in more detail, which somehow advocates for, after all, it is really easy. Don't be afraid. No? And then we have other inputs of the Russian psychologist Luria and of the mathematician Manin, who was here also 2-3 years ago in our seminar, saying you must accept that it is hard and the abstractions are deeply against human nature. And you cannot go around that. You have this problem. So, and then this was also my original plot. But of course, there is also something in this direction, that the math working experience, and there is also Peirce, and I have learned this also mostly from our colleague Peter Wortmann Christiansen, that Peirce had a kind of desperate hope that the mathematical working experience, namely handling something which is easy and difficult at the same time, and where the borders, what is easy to understand, what is difficult to understand, are very difficult to line out, that the math working experience could be a key for, in modern language, also for developing sustainable behavior in society. And this is also Peirce's so-called desperate hope, and Peirce's claim to the philosophers is that the problem of philosophy is to use mathematical experience to explain how meaningful communication between humans is, after all, possible. We have many examples for that. We understand each other, but we need the mass working experience to understand that. And I put here, if there's time for the discussion, some prominent examples in who have thought a little bit about this direction, how to use the mathematics, the East German philosopher Ernst Bloch and the American multimillionaire and mathematician James Simons manifold theory and now in hedge funds. Ne? And he has just given a talk, the Einstein Memorial Talk of the American Mathematical Society, where he explained somehow what is to learn from mathematics for getting rich, for example. Ne? Yeah. Let me talk to the students. I've told it already. The mind of the, has it changed? The general wisdom, browse generation, me generation. And my answer, my message to you is that this is really absolutely misleading. There is no, if we start just with the evolutionary evidence. My wife is dog breeder, no? And we have dogs only in between 20,000 and 30,000 years. And of course the dogs look different nowadays than a wolf, but the psychologist, I don't know how they measure in her literature, but in her literature is written, you must expect that 80% of the psychological behavior of your dog is lupine, is wolfish. 80%, I don't know. But in any case, it is a substantial, I can confirm, because I have to go with the dogs, not she does. So I can really confirm it is. And this were 5,000, 10,000 selections breeding. And nevertheless, there is also an astonishing stability. You can say, but the human mind is a little bit different. And it is, I apologize for the comparison of dogs with students. But you see, there is at least something. There is another fact, and this I put here in the beginning on the picture, these Cro-Magnon aesthetics, that we go, when we go from Lascaux, we go to Tarquinia in Italia of the Etruscan Caravaggio's, we go to Titian Vecellio of the picture which I showed on the front in the beginning when you came in of Charles V on the horse there after fighting against the Protestants, and then Paula Modersohn Becker from the present exhibition in Louisiana, and Pollock from later, sometime in the 30s. This is just evidence that curiosity and imagination, creativity, all what we love with our students, that this is something social, stable over long, long, long periods. Okay, but there are some counter arguments. Marx in Politische Ökonomie says, das Sein bestimmt das Bewusstsein. Also the way of being, that means also the social circumstances, are determined for your consciousness. So this speaks a little bit in a different direction. But again, what Marx has studied were these big secular changes from feudalism to capitalism, or from older societies, that these different societies, and within societies, different classes, which have completely different life situations. But there is no, also to me, there is no evidence, this completely misreading of Marx when to claim, well, there is, you must see that this changed life situation of the young, they have now a mobile telephone. Can you imagine that you had not mobile telephone when you were a kid, but they have. Now realize this, their mind must have changed. You have read Marx. This is just foolish. No? But another more serious thing is Peirce. This is all I learned from Peter. And Peter has a little skewed love for mysticism. No? And he found in Peirce that Peirce had calculated every 800 years back, things were completely different. He wrote this around 1900. He said to the readers, around 1100, with this confrontation between Christian and Arab things, the whole way of thinking were completely different than our thinking nowadays. We cannot really understand how people were thinking around 1100. Go out 800 years back. He had some biologistic components in his thinking. 800 years back, you can see the next break with Constantine the Great, where suddenly the whole mindset of antiquity changed to this late antiquity under Constantine, a completely new mindset. Go 800 years back, you are with Solon in Athens and with Pythagoras, well, completely different mindset and to the time. Go 800 years back, you are with the pyramids and you have some, go 800 years back. So, well, it can be true, it might not be true, but it is at least at the scale of 800 years, and I reject that this has something to do with the claimed set and change of mindset happening from the time when I was young to the time when you were young. Yeah. So the third is, which is also a little bit difficult, is all this brain research. There were in the 70s a neurologist who made this research on bicameral systems in the brain and had elaborated that there are some changes happened around 3,000 years ago that this bicameral system actually was also changed and was also developed, and the connection between the left and the right side, who earlier gave you some voices so that you could hear voices of your ancestors or imagined ancestors or other things, that this wall was made about 3,000 years ago and changed completely. This is again completely other time scale. We must look other places if we want to understand what has changed. And so I looked at my own writing 40 years ago. I made with Klaus Krickeberg, as a probabilist, and who was my boss at the time in Bielefeld, I made a volume, Mathematisierung der Einzelwissenschaften. And there it is. This is now a modern falsum on the Springer has put it on it now for the e-book edition of this old book, because it was original Birkhäuser, but now Birkhäuser was bought by Springer. Never mind. It is all absolutely wrong what we wrote at that time. It is everything is, and it is still, I read it only because former colleague of mine in Bielefeld, Hans Cecin, wrote to me here 2 months ago and said, oh, I must tell you, the old book which you made and Klaus was quoted here by some science theoreticians as their main source and so on for understanding. This is so very interesting that your old book after 40 years is considered in some circles as the main reference. But I was so ashamed about the things which were cited there. It is all wrong. We got everything wrong. No? We had in the biology, it was of course under the impression that one had now the DNA. And one had a fantastic ideas when you look at it, that now we are this connection of biology and medicine. We are there. We can now understand it. No? We can now understand all the cell. We have the laboratory equipment, and we have the only thing which is missing, the necessary mathematics to put the observation together. This is your job, Bernhelm and company, but this is the only thing is missing, but we are almost there. Just we have your help and to understand it better. In chemistry, it was, you will remember, this was the time with stereochemistry, where people thought that just when we have the chemistry in three dimensions written down, then of course all the properties of the molecules will suddenly be clear. The only thing to do, please, mathematicians, help us a little bit more with this data mining or this or modeling, so that we understand better how to make this stereochemistry, so that we can, in fact, just on a piece of paper calculate all the properties. Physics, it was the standard model. One had one example, the omega particle. Now one has perhaps the second example with Higgs particle. But the principal change, new discoveries of physical properties like high temperature supraconduction of Betnard's in 1975 or when it was. This was not done by the standard model, but this was done by alchemist work, by going through series of experiments and saying after some time, shouldn't we try whether we can get supraleadening by looking at insulators? And then they studied some insulators, and then suddenly they had a high temperature supraleadening. So this was completely misleading, all what is was written there. Also, the concept of role of modeling, I learned only here when I came to Roskilde from Tay, from Boyle, that the main force of mathematics in physics is, of course, the model-based measurement. There is really a model. That they have no need to have this, what the biologists at that time called this cycle model, with reality. And this is all terrible. This is in the book, this cycle model, which I fought the last 20 years against it, but which is repeated. And the cycle model where you have a reality, then you approximate the reality as good you can by some formalism, then you work further on with the formalism, then you compare this with reality, then you make a new round and make a better approximation of your things. All this stupidity we had there. No? The only thing where we are right were in geophysics with numerical weather prediction. This is true. At that time we had no numerical weather prediction, but it was predicted there. And actually, now it is. They can say it is at least, we are, how many days we are from Christmas? We are 7 days from Christmas Eve. And nevertheless, the meteorologists can say today that it will not be snow. It will be about 5 degrees, perhaps more, to Christmas. This is really something fantastic. You must follow a little bit in the history, Jens and I, we did it, of the earlier how they did weather prediction. That's, it was absolutely impossible to say something 7 days in advance. But here they make it, and I'm willing to make a bet for some amount. We can talk afterwards about that this will be correct. Yeah. Linguistics with the artificial intelligence. What is written there? I'm so ashamed. No? Educational studies, psychology. This was, of course, funny. This was a, Krikeberg had always funny ideas, and he thought, well, then we take also theology. So he was a little bit more wise than I was. I was too enthusiastic, but he said, Bernhard, but when there is also a good perspective, why are we not inviting a professor in theology? And he came from Münster, this is the most Catholic part of Germany, and gave a wonderful talk on the role of mathematical thinking in theology. And of course, law was with us. History, sociology. In sociology, the only person where I'm not ashamed here is a letter which Niklas Luhmann wrote to me at that time, because he was clearly also the only person who really could see that that we were going galoppy, no? And not in the way of the Frankfurter Schule. I had not contact at the time with the sociologists which are political on my side of the left wing, also the Adorno, Horkheimer, Habermas ring, because they were not oriented, they were not informed. It was meaningless to talk with them about mathematics because they had never interested. It was wonderful to discuss a whole night with Adorno on music because he understood something about it. But it was meaningless to talk with Adorno about mathematics. I never tried. I didn't try it with Habermas, but I tried it with Niklas Luhmann because his system thinking is really rich of mathematical metaphors. And so it was very good discussing with him, but he was the only voice in this book which a little bit was warning, actually, an interesting thing. I will put this more in the written version, but not here. And of course, economy, I need not to tell you how stupid this was later. Very intelligent man, a later Nobel Prize winner, Richard Zelten, wrote the article. He was also guest in IMFUFA in the early years here once. And intelligent man with many interesting things, but the basic ideas, forget it. No? Now the question is, how could this happen? These exaggerations. Exaggerated, vain expectation. I have two explanations. The one is it was only 25 years after the war. The war in Western side, with Western view, was won not by the Red Army, but it was won by the big computers in England under the leadership of Turing, who could make read the codes of German Navy, and it was won by the nuclear energy in Japan and the two explosions there. This was the general wisdom in the West. The general wisdom in Germany was a little bit these damned Allianz, they had there something better. But we were neither so bad. We had the jet technology, and until 1945, just we had been a little bit faster, our Wunderwaffen could have done it. This was not so openly spoken about, but this was a general feeling about the Second World War, that the Second World War was somehow decided about this triad, which is now dominant in also today in discussion on mathematics, the computer, the nuclear energy, the discussion is coming back, as you know, and the third thing, the mass tourism of jet flight, which is also one of the dominant problems we have to fight with now. So this can be an explanation for accelerated expectation, and here it can be also the pernicious structuralism and proliferation. I have some quotes with you, but time is running out. I will not read this all up, but it is also shocking to read what very intelligent people at that time wrote about the role of mathematics, that the mystery, the key to understanding the power of mathematics is generalization. I was so lucky that I was not educated here, but I was educated in Bonn, which was some international kind of center, world center for mathematics in the early 60s. And there, this was the worst word one never was permitted to use was generalization. It is generalized abstract nonsense. This was a time where in mathematics, after it was a counter wave, after in the 20s, with Emmy Noether, another German mathematician, came the structuralism wave. And then in the 50s came the counter wave, where one said, the only thing which really happens is look at the seven-dimensional sphere. It is meaningless to look at spheres. There is no general problem for spheres. Look at the seven-dimensional sphere. There is something. Look at that and that properties, and that and that. Look not on differential, but look, as I did there in my book, on the index, on one special invariant. The whole fight of structuralism in the 20s and 30s were against single invariants, as we call this. But all this came back in the 60s when one discovered generalization is the worst word in mathematics, and we must try to avoid it, at least. No? So this can be that this generalism, which was just a historical stupidity, like my many stupidities, that this has given at that time wrong expectations, they are away, happily, should I say. No? Now we go to the next, looking back, the changes in the mathematical concept. I have here from Phil Davies a list of 15 changes. I will not go through the list, time is running out here for me, but I will just say he gave a list of 15 dramatic changes in mathematics, turning points he calls it, where in these turning points also our worldview changed, which had influence on the worldview, be it the question of existence, which was raised with when one could find out that square root of 2 is not commensurable. It's not possible to write this as a quotient of integers. Then Euclid's elements, and here the long, long list. And when you go through the list, then there were two of the 15 turning points in the development of mathematics with great, really great society philosophically implications. Two of these were in my lifetime. And the same is when you look at the seven great math riddles. Also here, the solution of algebraic equation, then the transcendency of pi, which is in popular word, the question, can the circle be the length of the circle by passer and lineal by elementary geometric transformations transformed into the length of the circumference of a square. No? And then Lindemann solved this. This happened before my lifetime. But this happened. Cohn in 1963 proved that the continuum hypothesis cannot be proved with the general axiom system of real numbers. In 1975 or something like that, it was proved by Appel and Cohn and Haken. Haken was also earlier guest here in our department, that for color surface. Then it was in the 90s, Fermat's last theorem by Andrew Wiles, and then it was here in 2002 by Perelman, the Russian, the Poincaré conjecture on space. And one is open, the Riemann hypothesis, but four of seven solved in my lifetime. Why are we not telling this to the students, that they live in a very, very special time where something in this subject really has changed? Not in the sense of these wrong promises, which we thought. We are long far away of this. Ne? But in another sense, something is really happening. And of course, what has changed is these 61 to 63. These numbers we had in Bonn and in Darmstadt were the first IBM, this was a 709T. T is with transducer, and then 709T was then written 7090. This was the typical way where this machine was in. And this was not in Bonn, this was at Ames Center in 1961 in Bonn, and in Darmstadt we got it, I think, in January 1963. These were huge expenses which were given to universities. It is incredible. Nobody in industry, Siemens had not so machine, Bayer Leverkusen had not so machine. It was the public, not the military even, ne, had these machines. But it were the Deutsche Rechenzentrum in Darmstadt who had it, and as was das Institut für Instrumentelle Mathematik des Landes Nordrhein-Westfalen, also which was a part of the math department in Bonn, but differently financed. We had these machines, and one could rent them for 63,500 a month, equal to $520,000. In 2014. And one could also buy it for, and actually we bought it in Bonn, we built a whole building with 340 square meters ground for the 1790. 340 full climatized building, and the whole building with not only the machine, but there were a lot of machines, also hood read, card readers, and so on and so on. These were 1.8 times 10 to the power 10. This is 18, at that time, in that money, it was 18 millions mark. So perhaps it is something like now much more than a billion mark in current currency or euro. Long time before industry. The other thing which struck me when I looked, the social recognition for young scientists. Of course, some of my colleagues, very nice colleagues, I will not say student, they went to industry. But the best one, Not a single one went to industry, but of course there were the challenging possibilities were in public arenas. There were many interesting, both at universities, but also on, for example, I came after the diplom, which is comparable perhaps to the Kandidatgrad here. I came after the Kandidatgrad to a traffic planning institute. This was not a purely commercial, but this was the Landesverkehrsplan des Landes Nordrhein-Westfalen. These were public money, but they had also the money to hire people. They had the machines which were necessary and to give us the time to make something. It was completely different. The salary, it was the salary was compared with usually salary was actually incredibly high. And the social security was great. Usually you were then at such research institutes, you were employed just as an Angestellter with indefinite, also with all the rights of an Angestellter, and you were there. Ne? And of course it had the, and same later I had in Bielefeld, Mons and others have seen it, where I had my own secretary. Ne? With, I was just 31 years or so, but doing decent work without a secretary. Can you imagine this? No, nobody could imagine. There were administrators who thought, oh, this we can, no, of course Bernhard needed a secretary, no? A full-time secretary. No? So you could not go in my office just where there was a board, but you had to go through the office of the secretary if you want to come. It was just an optimism in perhaps exaggerated optimism, but it was at least something what one could call also social capital around science and mathematics. And this changed. So I was 2 weeks ago with the conference of Qualitätsurval for the new report they have made how to high the quality of wiedergehende Udernisse. And the opening transparent was this. Of course, there are students. There are still somehow, they have it. There are also Unterweiser teachers. But there are Studienouns leaders. Ne? Not Studienoun, but Studienoun leaders. There are Bestürzer, there are institutions, leaders, and there are the central realm. This, it is incredible. Yeah, let me. How and why? So, this is, we had a project, Christine, Crystal Green, yeah, Crystal is there, and Christina. We had a project with Mike some years ago in NatBus. It was, I think, the third semester, second study year. And in the presentation, I made this vest trick to show what is a topologist doing. I'm a topologist, and what are we doing? Yeah, we think, for example, how could it be possible that I can remove a vest under my jacket, ne? And I talked about it, and then they asked, is this mathematics? And we discussed it, and then out of this, I should have to admit that the similar problem in two dimension is very easy. Not easy, but it is solved. It is classical, namely the so-called winding number. Also to understand whether something is contractible in the plane, we make calculate a winding number, and the winding number can be calculated by integral, by solving a differential equation, by combinatorial methods. This is a well-established mathematical theory to calculate winding numbers in two dimensions. But to see whether this vest is contractible on the surface of my body there. This is a little bit difficult, more difficult, because we are going one dimension up. And as soon we go a little bit up, all our imagination is lost and we can only calculate. So this was the start point. And then they made an interesting project out of it. How can it be that many problems in mathematics are easy to formulate but difficult to solve? Lagrange died 1813, and there is a report of a G. Nobody knows who was this G, but there are some speculations about. And G has reported later in written form and very believable, the historians, Grattan Guinness, who died here, I think, 5 days ago, the British math historian, he believed firmly that G's report is correct. And he said that until he died, Lagrange was so sorry for the students that they have to read his textbooks. Why have I written all these textbooks? The students, it would be so nice if they just would stick to Newton's Principia. Then one could explain them Newton's Principia. But of course there are some limitations in the calculus. Then they can only do that and that limitations. When they read my textbooks, they can do more, but should they really do it? It is so terrible hard. The second thing was, well, reported that a student came to the professor and asked advice what he should next study and so on, and Lagrange asked him, are you, how is your father, are you of a wealthy family? And the student was surprised and said, no, so bad. I'm so sorry for you. Then you really must work hard. This is the only way one can have success in mathematics. I have experienced it myself. I'm from poor family. So I had really go to the hardship. Or when he was teaching his report, he could, even in elementary class, nobody could understand it, what happened in him. But he could suddenly go to the window and just look 10 minutes out in the class, were disciplined, they checked internet or what they had at that time. And then he came back and continued his class. But he suddenly was offended by one argument which in his mind could be more easy. So this is Lagrange, so sorry. Singer, so proud. Even now, as an old man, when he was asked after the Abel Prize, what are you doing now? Well, now I must do really hard mathematics, because the only meaning of mathematics is doing something which the engineers not can do, which others not can do. I will now, the rest of my life, concentrate on the most hard, still also to my incomprehensible parts of mathematics, because that is the role of mathematics, to deal with extremely hard problems. And the same man has given here all the last years, he's over 80 now, but he participated in the beginning teaching, a little bit like Lagrange, because he said, it is so fascinating to see when a student understands something, or when a student not understands, this is deep fascinating, even if it is an elementary calculus class. So is Arnold, friend of Mohn Sniss, of some committee work, and he was asked, what is the situation in Russia? And he said, well, it's terrible. Now the professors are more clever and know more than the students. No? And this is, again, this so sad. No? Also the idea that professors know more than students. Also teaching is only interesting if the professor at least get one new idea in every hour is teaching. No? This is also was his philosophy and also of many other mathematicians, that's the whole idea of teaching. So was Hirzebruch. One asked Hirzebruch, how come that Max Planck Institutes were an old tradition, and we had many Max Planck Institutes also in West Germany after Second World War, in chemistry, in physics, in biology, medicine, But there was no Max Planck Institute in mathematics in the 50s, nor in the 60s, and only in the 70s it came. Well, he said, and he was a canonical candidate to be the first president of a Max Planck Institute for Mathematics in West Germany. And he explained it to me that he was also contrary to the leading body of the Max Planck Gesellschaft because he insisted that there should only be very few permanent positions and all the others should were teachers of universities. And the whole idea, having a Max Planck Institute doing really hard research without Nabelschnur, what is this? In English, yeah, umbilical cord. Without an umbilical cord to teaching, this was meaningless. No? And then they said, okay, then there is no Max. And this fight went begin. He said in late 50s already. Were first time he offered that to him. Then it went through the 60s, and only in the 70s, then the Max Planck Gesellschaft accepted. Okay. You get your will, and we make it as you will, that in principle, all members of the Max Planck Institute have to have an association to a university with teaching. Manin says mathematics is also difficult. He has psychological studies, which are in his book on logic, very much explained based on observations which Luria had made on brain damage, and he derived from this that abstractions in their very nature are more difficult for the human nature than doing a judgment, for example, on personal relations or other things. Plus, he has four theories, four levels of fixation of beliefs. He was very clear. I go now a little bit rapid through these things. You can read later. I put an extended version of this in 1 week on my internet, and there you can read. So he has an anthropological message that our concepts are made in 100,000 years in experience with our contexts we had. And in that situation, he said, with reference to quantum mechanics, when we open a new window to the world where our mind has not been formed in 100,000 years ago, we have a problem. Gauss, Hermander, they have a standard formulation when they wrote reviews. I was also subjected once by Hermander. I guess it was Hermander. In the same review, he wrote, this is completely incomprehensible, what Bernheim and my friend at that time, Wojciechowski, have written. Moreover, unfortunately, it is also wrong. And I can add that the essential part were done by me in that and that paper. So this is, Gauss has made this formulation many times. Hermander has made it in this classical way, but I must admit that Hermander also gave me a hint in the same devastating review, gave a hint, which were the basis actually for perhaps my mathematical work in the last 20 years, because in one formula he wrote just beside of all that, formula 3-4 looks interesting. And then this was the discovery of Wojciechowski and me that the so-called Cauchy data spaces are Lagrangian subspaces of a certain symplectic space. And this is, also it is not only negative, but this is, or when mathematicians in discussion say, it's clear. Yeah, then this is expression for, this is really hard stuff you are telling me. Now, math is easy. This is my last. You cannot see this here, but it is 10 of 10. Yeah? This is my last. The first is Schopenhauer. He wrote a book, Die Welt als Wille und Vorstellung. Philosopher calls this philosophy. I would call this poetry. But this was the German style from Hegel, Schopenhauer, later Nietzsche, Heidegger, that these were most of all, poets, and who loved to make wonderful formulations. So he made also wonderful formulations that Euclid's complications are monstrous and dispensable. Euclid does not explain the why. Euclid's proof for the Pythagoras theorem has some lines which are drawn in a big picture, and nobody can understand why actually we should look at this line. The proof of Euclid is giving only a hidden mystery, and it is hidden for the reader. There is an alternative. Look at me. And then he has in his book, in the German edition and now reprinted in the 2009 English edition, look at this here. If you look this here, then it is clear, if you just count all these things, that this square is the same as this square which is here, namely putting this and that together, and this and that. And then he said, if you look at this, then everything is clear. And why is Euclid, why are the mathematicians so snobbish, so hinterhältig? He writes, what is hinterhältig? Also, so gemein, so underhand, so underhand. They are underhand, ne? And make things artificially complicated. It is so easy. Of course, he has a special case. Also, we tell the students the interesting thing with Pythagoras is that this simple thing is also true when these sides here are perhaps of different lengths. If you have here this right angle, but if you take here different lengths, you make from here to here, then the Pythagoras theorem is still valid. So for us, the whole thing of Pythagoras is an approximation theorem that something, you can make some perturbations without changing the true fact of the theorem. Only if you change this angle, then we get over to the cosinus theorem. Gauss, but he blamed also this, and I put the quotations on my internet page then for you. And Gauss' answer was, on the contrary, so simply mathematics is so difficult, we shall never tell the reader how we got the idea. This was a claim from Schopenhauer. You shall tell the exact proof doesn't matter. Tell them the idea. Here is the idea. I did it. Gauss said, no. What counts in mathematics is, mathematics is so difficult that we shall hide all the complications we went through for finding the proof. We shall work as long as the proof is in the best simple form, so that it. Chomsky says, well, math is easy, or at least his student Pinker writes this in this way, because every child has solved the greatest math exercise of its life in the age of two, when it forms the generative grammar of and assembles out of some words a generative grammar in his language. Atiyah, so this is controversial. Atiyah says, math is getting more easy and easy. He compares math with a big warehouse. Looking for a box of nails in a country shop took usually the owner of the country shops in a small village 10 minutes to find the box. Now go to a big Bauhaus or others, then you look just where is this, and then you have it. It's much faster. When you make it more complex and more structure in it, and in the extent we have more complexity, we discover also more ways. And so in this way, this is a myth. And Phil Davies and I, we have written against Atiyah there. This is absolute myth. Yes. Then we have Lagrange, who says, After all, mathematics is not so difficult because we have natural approximation. Nature makes some approximation. We have in the planetary system, by chance, objects like the big planets who move on almost circular, and we have the majority of comets which look on extreme eccentric curves. Therefore, we have two very natural approximation forms so that we can both calculate the one because we can assume that it's close to circle, and we can calculate the other because we can assume that it is close to an ellipsis. And this is nature has a gift to nature. I learned it from your wife that this is, Michael, that this is not longer true and not the last wisdom. Now there are many planetary systems, not on Earth, but in other solar systems, which have not this nice property, which Lagrange explained, that there is just two extreme types of movements. There is long list of Perth, which goes all in the direction of Gramsci later, or Frère, that one should look at the forms of life, and one has then some coding and so on. But all this ends with two contradictions. I would end here in my talk, that we have in mathematics, these are very nice ideas, all this, but we have the contradiction that we need to teach results, not only processes, not only Tenkemode or something like that, but one needs results in science and mathematics. And the other thing is that we learn best, we know from Project One, students learn best in context, when they can see this in context. But the power of mathematics is to be solved free of the context. That is the true power, that we can transport some experience from one context to another. So we cannot solve this here. We cannot solve this here. We must tell the administrators this math teaching is difficult, and we cannot deliver what they want, an easy, more easy accessible teaching in the sense they want. Our only hope is Kierkegaard, who told in Entweder oder, no, I have only read it in German, Enten Eller, explained there are two difficult things in life, the love to another human and the love to God. And both of these two difficult things, I do not totally agree that these are the most, I'm married now with a Dane in soon 30 years, and I have not so much experience with love to God, but this was at least his thing. These two difficult things can only require two things. Let one be seduced and develop the passion. And this is what mathematics teaching is good to when it is successful. Thank you for your attendance.